Hi, I'm Katie Page.
And I'm Paul Ashton.
And we made a comedy feature film called This Isn't Funny that Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro helped us produce.
Along with us, it stars Anthony LaPaglia, Eddie Gathegi, Mimi Rogers, David Pasquese, Gia Carides, and Danielle Pennebaker.
And it features some hilarious stand-up comedy from Beth Stelling, Ahmed Barucha, Will Weldon,
and Katie. And you can stream the film right now in the U.S. store of iTunes, on Google Play, and at Amazon.
And if you like it, please tell your friends, share it, and rate it.
Thanks so much, guys.
Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye,
sort of a nostril,
two teeth.
One of the teeth has a small cavity.
Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
You had to start off with this.
Of course.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
To Anatomy of a Movie. Ah, man. Who wants to kick this thing off?
I'm really excited for the... Today we're talking about Peanuts, the 2015 version created by Blue Sky. Who's all excited for this?
I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's
very really excited.
I have mixed feelings all the time with the Peanuts gang.
All the time, huh?
All the time.
Is it that angst?
It's confusing.
Interesting. Well, we do have a full lineup today. To my far left, we have...
Hello, movie fans. Dimitri Panos.
And I'm Stephanie Wenger. So excited to join the panel.
Stephanie is
Thank
back.
You, Stephanie.
And then?
I'm over analytical Phil.
Over analytical Phil. But, all right. So, Phil, give us your quick thoughts about this movie then.
You know what? I did enjoy it. But it's one of those things when you read, as an adult, if you really dissect it, I've always had, there's just so many questions. And they've, part of it, you just have to accept certain things the way they are and not question them. I've always questioned, like, for example, Peppermint Patty. Who is he, she? Is he a she? And these are questions that just plague me. And that's just one instance of it. And kind of throughout the years, I've had more. And, you know, again, it's my unwillingness to just let these things go. But enjoyable nonetheless. I can't argue.
Peppermint Patty is the Peanuts hippie slash tomboy. I mean, she wears Birkenstocks, always has, you know, and she's a tomboy. She's better at sports than most anybody else, and she has a wonderful sort of ward relationship with Marcy, who tends to help Peppermint Patty out in various things and communicating with Chuck, as she calls Charlie Brown. She's the only character that calls Charlie Brown Chuck. Just think she's a tomboy. I'm not going to read any more into it.
All right.
Which
Stephanie,
weekend.
How about you? What did you think?
I just love the movie. It just made me smile. It's not without flaws, and I'm sure we'll get into those. But I just was sitting there, and I was like, oh, it's, you know, Thursday afternoon at 5, and I'm smiling. And there's something to that, I think.
Yeah, I didn't think there were. I mean, I love this movie. I didn't really think there were any flaws in this movie. If you watch, you know, as part of your childhood, I just couldn't get away. I didn't get enough Charlie Brown. You know, whether there were toys, I had little astronaut Snoopy, you know, watching the Christmas special, you know, Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, watching Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, Thanksgiving, you know, Day Charlie Brown. All of these shows growing up as a kid, they were on TV. You can only see them once a year. There was no video. So you had to wait until that particular
You couldn't
season.
Record it on your cell phone?
Couldn't record it on a cell phone. Couldn't record it on a VCR. You had to wait until it came on, and it was a big event at the household. For me, anyways, it was a huge event when these specials came on, you know. And they, you know, I even remember Little Debbie snack cakes, huge advertiser.
Oh, they're amazing.
New York Peppermint Patty was another huge advertiser on the Peanuts special. And even to this day, and you know as a fact because you witnessed it firsthand on holidays like Halloween, mm-hmm. I start off by watching on Halloween night the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, which then segues into Halloween. Great segue.
Yes, but, and we'll let the audience know that we have been to, us panel have been over to your house yeah. to watch Christmas specials yeah, and Christmas Peanuts specials.
And you know, I'm glad that they're on wonderful HD Blu-ray. And when they were making this movie, seeing the trailers just filled me up with that Peanuts warmth that they get. And there's a little bit of, you know, there's probably a lot more of Charlie Brown in me. I like to say there's a little bit of Charlie Brown in every one of us. There's a lot of him in me. And so I can empathize. You know, all I got was a rock. But this movie, for me, it just hit all the right notes that all of, whether it's the strips that I read or the specials that I saw or and watched, they just hit all those notes of innocence and perseverance and yeah, the camaraderie, the friendships. Yeah, for me, I love this. You know, I really like this movie.
I just enjoyed the overall message as well. Yeah, like, absolutely. The takeaway was something that I think, obviously designed for kids, but something that was, like, a nice reminder for adults, I felt like. And just, I really enjoyed the whole experience of it, and the takeaway from it was something that, as I was driving in, you know, commute traffic in L.A., still I was thinking, like, oh, that was really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this film, and granted, I'm still fairly young, but, you know, the Peanuts stories have spanned so many years and so many decades into so many different generations that, granted, I was young when I kind of grew up with Peanuts, but I wasn't fully aware, maybe as such as your demographic, Dimitri, who's had more years of the Peanuts than we have.
But they've always been there. I mean, this is a franchise. I'm not even going to use the word franchise for Peanuts, but they've been around for such a long time that you've grown up with them.
Yeah.
The television specials are on annually, and they continue to be huge in the ratings. Huge. Whether it's the Christmas special, whether it's Thanksgiving, or whether it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, those nights that those shows are on draw really big ratings, and they usually end up beating out whatever is first run on TV for that evening. So kids constantly grow up with this. And the advent of home entertainment doesn't seem to soften the ratings. They don't take a hit in the ratings because you can watch those specials anytime you want. So, you know, you grew up with them as much as I did. They've always been around.
My parents grew up with them. They love. I think it's fair to say my parents love Peanuts more than I did.
Uh-huh.
So, Phil, did you grow up with the Peanuts?
I did grow up with the Peanuts. I mean, one of the things that I found interesting was the love of it is such that when they marketed this movie, that you just needed images.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. They had no title anywhere. They just had the date of the movie and a picture of one of them. So.
Or two of them. I mean, yeah, we can talk marketing. I mean, you would see, I mean, one of my favorite images they had is Charlie Brown and Snoopy arm around each other. They're back and watching like a sunset.
So cute.
And then some of the tagline was, you know, one of the taglines I remember is an underdog, a story about an underdog and his dog. And that's all it said. Like, that's all it was. And you're right. Like the marketing in this movie, they did a great job. Because they didn't have to reinvent the wheel, and they didn't have to overdo it.
No.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about just how this film did get started. And as we know, we have the Charles Schulz who created the Peanuts, but it was actually John Cohen from the Fox Animation back in 2008 reached out to Craig Schulz, the son of Charles Schulz, to talk about this film, get it started. And originally, the Schulz family wasn't keen on the pitch because they were too worried that they didn't have the correct vision. If they were going to go with such a story that's close and dear to their hearts, that it had to be done and true to the characters in the story. And eventually, we did get that, but that was the inception of how this film got started.
And taking it a step further as well, it did start off as a short film from Blue Sky. They felt that, you know, that this would be a great property. To bring it to the big screen, back to the big screen again, They showed, you know, the Schultz family is obviously very protective of the Peanuts family, mm-hmm. the Peanuts gang. And they agreed to see the short film, and they saw it and they hated it. Mm-hmm. They hated it. They said, you didn't get the characters right. They go, but you sort of got the story right. Mm-hmm. And we like that. And that, like you said, it's just, it was the seed in which they had to, you know, just water a little bit. And through very many iterations, and you came up with a classic Peanuts story.
Yeah, and on top of that, they said they liked the background style of the scenes and, like, the overall visual look, but they wanted the characters, obviously, to be just perfect. And they liked the story, and they said, you guys have the vision and the idea, but you need to just execute it more properly. But they realized the potential.
I think that's always a tough thing. I mean, one of the things that, you know, with this, you have to figure out a way to get all of them in. But how do you always do that? And I mean, there's so many of them, and to balance screen time is always going to be a juggling act. And so depending on how you interpret it, like, I imagine if any one of us was to kind of pen a story and how it's going to go for the Peanuts, it'd be different, right? And for you, it would have 90% Charlie Brown because you love Charlie Brown, but that's what's so great about
Charlie
the Peanuts.
Charlie Brown and Snoopy.
Yeah. But that's what's so great about the Peanuts is that everyone can kind of gravitate towards one or the other. You know, if one of us loved Lucy, then all of a sudden it become Lucy-centric. So I understand that was probably one of the bigger aspects that they had to deal with.
Yeah. And then,
I was just going to say, I thought it was smart when they were creating the story that they didn't waste time having the first half hour of this movie be introducing the characters. We all sit at this table. Everyone knows these characters by now. You don't need it to be a huge introduction. Like, this is Charlie Brown. Like, we got it. And I felt like they dropped us right in the story started immediately, which I appreciated.
And again, Schultz... you know, the son of the great Charles Schultz was they were trying to do a television movie, and after seeing those renderings in the background, they figured, well, why don't we take a crack at doing a screenplay? And if anybody's going to know these characters and how to write these characters, and again, yet still be protective of the franchise, you know, that's the key thing. And I think one of the charms, it's like you said, we're already familiar with these characters. I don't need an introduction. The introduction is Charlie Brown stepping out of his house, going to the frozen pond to skate with his friends. That's the introduction. You're already familiar with that.
Exactly. I feel like within a scene like that, you pick up all those inner, like that he's an underdog, all those basic things that if you are a little kid and you've never seen a Charlie Brown cartoon, you'll pick up the basics, and that's all you need in a movie like this.
Right.
Yeah, and then we had Steve Martino, who directed this whole film, coming off of the Blue Skies, Ice Age franchise, and also the successful Rio franchises as well.
And Horton Hears a Who.
So he's worked really closely with Blue Sky, and he himself grew up a big Peanuts lover, and his main direction was he wanted to stay true to the characters and the stories of, you know, just the whole story in general. Right. And that was his main goal, is that everyone just do each character justice.
Yeah. And I felt another charm of this movie was that, pardon me, they didn't modernize the character. They didn't put them in the modern world. They've stayed in the world that they've been born of, and they are still there, so we still see rotary telephones. We still see a typewriter. Mm-hmm. We don't see any tablets. We don't see, we're not seeing cell phones play a part in this movie. We're actually seeing kids go out and play with one another and skate and actually work together as kids. Go over to kids' house and say, Charlie Brown, come out, you know, come play with us. That stuff, to me, I was so very thankful for. Now, there was no extra flash outside of the modern animation that was used to make this. You know, but it made me wonder that the other kids in the other kids in the theater who may have, you know, taken a dose of Charlie Brown in a half hour increment What do they think of a movie where there really isn't the same? These Peanuts characters are not on the same wavelength, so to speak. Like, you know, these kids today do have the cell phones. They have the Game Boys. They know how to manipulate this stuff very well. But they're watching a movie where the kids in this movie aren't like them. They don't have that technology. And it just made me wonder, did the parents maybe enjoy this movie more than their kids? I don't know. But it's a question I wanted to throw out here and see.
I think that's a great question. I would hope that kids can enjoy something even without modern day cell phones and technology all throughout it. And that being said, I also read a review that they didn't put in like Jay-Z music over right. the top of this, which I actually really appreciated. I didn't want, like, there's a time and a place to have a fun soundtrack and have all new Beyonce music, not taking anything away from her, but I feel like you want to keep Charlie Brown or Peanuts the way it was, and by you should not be adding that kind of music in on top of it.
Yeah, you want the Giraldi Trio type jazz right. that we've grown up. It's so iconic mm-hmm. and memorable even as a child. That's what always set the tone to Peanuts. It wasn't, I think there was one pop artist.
Megan Trainor.
Trainor, who did a song.
Who did the dancing.
Yeah, song. And that was fine. It didn't.
But it fit with the movie.
Correct.
And she has kind of a tone to her voice that I think fits Peanuts, and as we were saying, that jazzy tone that we know Peanuts to be.
Yeah, well, we're getting a little bit into the music. We actually had a good friend, Christoph Beck, who yeah. we've had in the studio, who composed the music for this film. Going back to the original concept of having instrumental music, you know, pop music, that really helped set the tone of just like how classical it was.
Yeah.
And Christoph Beck, he said in interviews and whatnot, he didn't want to completely change the original scores, just kind of up them a little bit to mm-hmm. make it more up to date in a way, but still true to what. The original themes.
Well, it's always, I mean, just in general, the music, I mean, you know, when they wake up, like, oh, Bach and things like that. Yeah. Like, you're mm-hmm. always pulling from, you know, Beethoven, Bach, and all the classics. So, yeah, to reinvent that, you don't have to.
No. Especially when it comes to a character like Schroeder, who that's his background. That's what
that's
he
his
is.
Piano.
He's Beethoven. He's always it. It's his little piano.
I did enjoy that. So let's go into the writing. What do you think the writing was really true to each character and what the overall movie was? Because we had so many different like little vignettes throughout this film. So yeah. What did you think of the stories for each of the characters?
Well, to me, it really did. When you think about the specials, okay, they're a half hour long or less commercials. But they are made up of comic strip vignettes. Whether it's whether it's the Christmas special, whether it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, they're a little like set up comic strips where there's a little bit of a setup and a joke. And this one was done up in that same exact style. So, you know, a friend of mine said, you know, I think they may have spent too much time on the Red Baron stuff. I said, well, think about the Halloween special. About 50% of that is Snoopy in his Sopwith Camel, mm-hmm. crash landing in foreign territory, you know, sneaking around France. Half of that show is that. So it didn't bother me. I loved how it was rendered here. And you know, cursed you, Red Baron. this movie played out, for me anyways, it played out perfectly. And I thought the story, again, your main story is Charlie Brown. But everybody else will have some semblance of a gag with Charlie Brown, whether it be Lucy, whether it be Linus or Schroeder or Pigpen. Pigpen had a great thing that, you know, when Pigpen gets clean.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great gag.
Who are you?
You know, who are you?
That was amazing.
What did you think? I mean, was I the only one that thought that way? Or
no, I don't think so. Because what I liked, because they had a movie, they actually had the time to flesh out these smaller vignettes. The great thing with, especially the Red Baron story with Snoopy, is that I think maybe six different times throughout the film you saw this story, but it was each particular scene for the Red Baron. It was short enough for us to keep our attention and enjoy it, and then they just prolonged it. It's like every once in a while we would cut back to this right. story. And
I thought the pacing was really good. In terms of the vignettes, what I liked about it didn't, because there's definitely movies and comedies especially that they can kind of create a vignette that has nothing to do with anything. And yes, as a standalone piece would be very funny, but I thought they progressed things quite well overall. Mm-hmm. The Red Baron stuff, I agree with your friend. I thought it was slightly too much. And if you compare it to, yes, 30 minutes, then half and half. But when you're looking at an hour and a half movie, I thought maybe, they could have done a little bit less. It's compliment to them. The other stuff was just so interesting. Whereas right. The Red Baron stuff, yes, it advanced things forward, but at the same time was kind of recapping what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you, Phil. I felt like I really cared about the Charlie Brown storyline and wanted more and more of that. And maybe at the beginning of the movie, having that be the heavy, snoopier period and then move into, as we're getting the crush on the redheaded girl and all of that, mm-hmm. I kind of wanted more Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, what was interesting about the Snoopy thing is that they introduced the element of romance for Snoopy. Pardon me, which we really haven't seen before. And I wanted to see the Red Baron thing play out in hopes that Snoopy and Fifi at the end, he was going to save Fifi. And again, I really like Snoopy, and it's not taking away from the Charlie Brown story because it parallels. You know, one where we have a confident dog, like Charlie Brown, I'm not so sure, Charlie Brown, in a sense, learning how to dance, I thought was a great step, no pun intended, but there's a great step in that character in coming out of his shell to get the attention of the little redhead girl, whereas Snoopy is having to fight off and save his romantic interest in Fifi. And the other thing that I thought was very cool in this movie is, yes, Snoopy is Charlie Brown's dog, but there are times where Snoopy even bags on Charlie Brown. Like in the Christmas special, like when his tree dies and everyone's like, "You stink," he's like, "Ha ha ha," he even laughs and he'll walk away. And he's like, "Man's best friend." In this movie, I found Snoopy Boo more supportive of our Charlie Brown.
Not in the beginning, not when he's playing baseball.
Yeah. No. Snoopy's got to be a little bit, he's got to be a beagle in that way. But for the most part, he was trying to help. He was teaching him how to dance and all that. And that was really great. And at times, the way I read it too, like there was even, Snoopy was even proud of his Charlie Brown, in dancing and trying to do the thing. And then, of course, Charlie Brown has to slip and fall. It can't all go perfect for the guy.
I was rooting so hard for Charlie during that. I was like, oh, yes, he finally gets his moment to dance. I mean, dancing's awesome. But what do we think of the overall redheaded storyline? Did we like this? Because it seems like a new story for Charlie, having, chasing that one girl.
Now, the little red-haired girl has been in the Charlie Brown lore for a long time. I mean, okay. This is the first time that it's been made a main story. But Charlie Brown and the little redheaded girl, he's always had this like sort of kind of crush on her. This just brought everything to fruition, and I love the fact, number one, I loved how our little neighborhood was rendered, and that the new kid comes into town, and it's Charlie Brown who like first just goes head over heels for the little redheaded girl. And I loved, for the three quarters of the movie, we don't even really see her face. We either see her from the back, mm-hmm. or she turns quickly and walking away from Charlie Brown. So we as the audience don't, but we know whatever it is, Charlie is completely enamored with her. And he's so nervous that he can't even ring a doorbell. I loved how they elaborated on
that. What I liked about that was the fact that it didn't span just a couple of days or a week or whatever. In theory, you can look at it and say that they've had some sort of interaction throughout this year, good or bad, or non-existent, because Charlie Brown would have. But she obviously would know him after a year. Right. And the fact that despite all this, because his number one worry was, first impressions matter. Well, after a year, you've already gone through first impressions. But the fact that, he was able to change her mind about him, I think is a good message because, you know, for a kid, you're not always going to be in the situation of, oh, here's new kids, or I'm the new kid, and I'm going to change who I am. It's like, no, you can change who you are, even with the people that you're around.
Right.
Right. And I also liked how throughout the year we see he's always trying to do something to impress her, whether it be the dancing or the writing the book report. And I thought that was, like, I fell for him for that, because book reports. So, like, I liked how there were all these moments.
War and Peace.
War and Peace, the worst book to do. But
he did it.
He did it.
But all these moments that literally build up to you think he's going to get that win until, nope, we just knocked
him
down
again. But it wasn't even when, if you look at the movie too, and this is what another aspect and theme, the times that he impressed her weren't necessarily the times, like, doing the book report was a big thing. Dancing was the funny thing, but it was when he was unintentionally doing something that wasn't meant to impress her, whether it's helping Sally out in the play, being honest in front of all the friends regarding the grade. It was those qualities and characteristics that, that I looked at, he helped Sally in sacrificing what he practiced his act in hopes that he was going to impress the little red-haired girl. But he couldn't even do that because Sally was in trouble. Sally's his sister, and he had to go and help her put on the best show that she could do. And it was those small subtleties that's what impressed the little red-haired girl, even more so than the dancing. But the book report was a big thing because she went home because her aunt died or something. But it was when he unintentionally, when he did something that wasn't meant to impress her, and she saw through, and she
left
saw
the biggest
that.
Impact.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with that. That Patty defined being a winner as all these things you like stereotypically think of as winning, like be good at sports and do all of these, and I think like make money and all these things that you think of as like in today's world as being successful or a winner. And what ended up being a winning situation for him was that he was a good person, and I thought that that was such a great message for kids, because I think we all get lost in these kind of superficial things, and what made him a winner was who he was underneath, right. And that he wasn't perfect, but he cared, and I really loved that.
Let me ask you guys this before we move on.
Yeah.
This is more of an adult question.
Okay.
Which I doubt that there's like 5-year-olds listening. But, because she says to him, yeah, sure, we'll be friends. Did he get friend-zoned at the end? Because if he did, he walks away a loser.
I wouldn't say loser. I would say he gained someone in his life.
I don't...
But what he wanted...
Phil, it's... I totally see where you're going. I guess maybe the Charlie Brown optimism in me was that they were going to be like boyfriend and girl. Like, they were going to go to camp. They were going to write each other. You know, and again, this is Peanuts, and they are really young. So, girlfriend, boyfriend in that regards. But I think that they were going to be, in that age graph, steady.
Yeah, I think. I was going to say my answer to that is, like, I had, like, his name was Teddy, if you're out there. But, like, Teddy was, like, my kindergarten friend. But he was, like, my kindergarten boyfriend. So, like, that's how I took it to be. Like, not that in first grade or whatever, you don't call them a boyfriend. It's your friend. But he's, like, boyfriend.
I think it could just been worded, like, hey, Charlie, I like you, too. And then she gets on the bus.
Okay,
like,
that's fair.
See?
I get that. But also, you got to remember the
kids. He was Charlie Brown.
The age of these actual characters are anywhere from...
They can't say like. They don't understand the word
7
like.
7 to 12. You know, and they actually use real child actors for the voices.
Sure.
Ages 7 to 12.
Yeah.
And the producers and director went through thousands and thousands of tapes looking at so many different kids just to have the perfect voice for each person. And for example, the kid who voiced Lionel, I think it's Lionel.
Linus.
Yeah, Linus, that's it. Linus. They found a child actor who had a natural little lisp, but it wasn't acted, it was natural. So all these voices, and listening to the film, every character sounded just like the original, too.
Right.
So I think they did a great job in casting.
And it's funny because even when you I remember growing up watching the specials, they were always changing around the voices, and sometimes it was very subtle, but sometimes I could pick up on it and sounded like, well, this Charlie Brown sounds like he has a cold. But he still sounded like Charlie Brown that I was used to, depending on... Right now, I can't even remember the first Charlie Brown special that I watched. I mean, it could have been Halloween just because that comes before Christmas. But they did a really great job in finding this talent. And I really... Again, for me, it was a breath of fresh air that they weren't... A lot of animation today, kids' animation, relies on getting star talent. Like A-list actors to voice characters. They believe it's a box office draw, which in some cases it is. That's how you get the parents in. I don't really think the kids care. But this one stayed away from that. They stayed true to their roots, and they didn't have to go that star route to do that.
And what do you think they just listen to voices in that way? Because, I mean, in terms of casting process, it could be as simple as that. Like, you know, hey, send me your audio, and we're just going to listen to it. And therefore, any notion of age, gender, so on and so forth just goes out the window because you're just trying to match the voice as best you can.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly, you know, they listened to hundreds of they took in hundreds of, let's call it auditions and or tapes, and they really did do a great job in picking these kids who, a lot of them, this is their first time being involved in something like this, with the exception of the boy who plays Charlie Brown, Noah Schnapp. He plays the son of, if you saw Bridge of Spies, he's the son of Tom Hanks in Bridge of Spies. But most everybody else, a lot of people, this is their first foray into doing anything like this. And I think, too, back in the day, whether it's back in the 60s and such, you are talking about they were picking kids who weren't really in the business, but they had a nice-sounding quality. Like, they sounded like kids. And sometimes if you watch the special, you can pick up on... like whether there was a sound edit or something like that. But I think that's the charm of Peanuts. You got to remember, it's 50 years old. I mean, The Great Pumpkin is about 50 years old. And that's a long time to continue to get ratings and to build and build and build. The Schultz property itself, you go to Comic-Con, Schultz has a booth there, like a Peanuts booth. And literally, it is a very crowded booth from morning, noon, and night at Comic-Con in San Diego, where you got all this other distraction going on. Yet the Peanuts booth always has, you know, a line that will rival a Studios line or a Mondo line. It's so popular in that area. And I think when you're talking about the kids, I think part of it is the innocence of the voices that they pick for these kids.
And I think that's great because it just shows that they're in for the film, that they're trying to stay as true. And it's not about making money or drawing, you know, the audience into seats in that way. It was because they wanted to put the best movie out there.
Yeah. And what did you find, like, the humor in this movie, too, to me, was like the typical... It's the innocent humor that works. You were gonna elaborate.
Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, absolutely. I felt the same way, that it was totally appropriate. They weren't trying to. Sometimes you have a movie that they're trying to make the adult jokes and the kids jokes, and you're like, you can clearly tell what's for what.
Right.
And this felt like we know what we're creating. And there were definitely things that were for adults in it, and you could point like, oh, that's definitely for the parents. But it felt like they weren't trying to be like, oh, haha, we're trying to play over the kids' heads. Everything was like a kid could pretty much
get. They didn't purposely go to grab that adult humor. One thing that I noticed, Phil, you have a great story about trailers, which we'll get to, but I can just tell you that there was a slew of kids' movie trailers where I saw it prior to the movie, and at least two of them, number one, they just looked god awful, and each of them, well, they looked like they should go to like VOD, and each of the trailers featured a fart joke, like, and they're like, to force, like, this is what's gonna get
to force, you know, laughter.
To force laughter. Now look, I like me a good fart joke, but you know, when it's used just to get kids laughing, and I'll tell you, they were, you know, it. They fell flat. It didn't work because the movies didn't look good. In Charlie Brown, they don't have to rely on that type of humor at all. And I think, again, it just goes back to the charm and innocence of Charlie Brown, because they could make it out of whether it's childhood satire or, you know, you always laugh because we never see the adults in Charlie Brown. So it's always wah, 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 wah. That's funny as a kid. It's funny as an adult
today.
Still
funny now. And they casted Troy Trombone Shorty Andrews, who's an actual trombone player, to do the recordings of the trombone for the voice of the parents. Yeah. So I liked how they kept that element in there as well. So, again, true to the story.
Yeah, and Phil got a completely different experience watching trailers for the Peanuts movie.
The theater messed up, and yeah, they put an R-rated. Well, they loaded in the wrong movie. Hence, they loaded in wrong trailers, and the trailers were rated R for a movie that's rated G. Apart from like NC-17, that's as far off as you can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy. Were parents complaining?
Big mistake.
Yes, they were very much complaining. Which, by the way, just in general, as a quick side note, Gone with the Wind is rated G.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. However, Toy Story 3 is rated G. I'm trying to think of what's like rated PG versus G. And if you look up like the top 100 most grossing movies in the by category, it's
Wizard of Oz.
There's interesting lists of all of this, of what's rated G versus PG.
Oh, okay. I have to check that out.
it's quite intriguing.
So a lot of mortified parents. I'm sure that was an interesting theater.
That sets the tone.
Yeah, so
I can imagine.
And then they also, for the Snoopy Woodstock voice, they used original recordings by Bill Melendez.
Bill Melendez, yeah.
Which that was an interesting fact to realize as well. That I thought that was cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, Snoopy, just throughout his career, you know, he's sort of like, you know, you can liken him to an R2-D2. You just but you get what he's, you get whether he's happy, you get whether he's sad, you get whether he's angry, and he's like no other beagle that I've ever seen. But you know, his humor, his character, he's just, you know, you laugh at him when he showed up as Joe Cool. I was like, that's awesome. Yeah. He's Joe Cool. Is that the thing? I have a Joe Cool Christmas ornament. So he's not like you know, Joe Cool isn't a character that they've made a movie around or even a television special that I can recall, at least growing up. But he was in the strips. He's on birthday cards. So it was great that Joe Cool shows up. I love that.
Yeah, I was telling a friend about this movie last night, and I go, Snoopy's so cute because he doesn't say anything, but like you get everything that you need from that character. You know where he's at. And she was like, yeah, he's just like a real puppy. Like if you were to play with a puppy, you know what a puppy's thinking. I was like, actually, I've never thought of it in that capacity, but it's absolutely true. Like if you play with an actual dog, you can get everything from them without them speaking to you. And so they do a great job with just the animation of that.
Yeah, and I liked how each character had little nuances to what their what we as the audience already knew from the characters. Like Pigpen, he's always dirty. Mm-hmm. And Schroeder playing the music and whatnot. So like little odes to what each character was like. Which I thought was very cool.
Yeah.
Everything's cool. I love this film.
Phil, it looked like you were going to say something.
I was just going to ask, in general, because we've kind of hinted towards it, but who, for each, Dimitri, we can skip over you because I think it's Charlie Brown. But for the rest
Charlie
of you.
Charlie and Snoopy, for sure. Yeah,
but I wanted, you know, because again, I think it says a lot about a person based on what character they like. So it's, you know, Stephanie, Marissa, who is your favorite?
I think I identify as a person with Charlie Brown, but I loved the redheaded girl just because I was like, when I was little, I would have loved her because I always felt like the odd one out as red-haired. And so I was like, this is the best thing ever. And so there was a little bit of that as well. But as a person, I identify as Charlie Brown.
Okay. I always loved Snoopy. I loved drawing him as a kid, and I still love drawing him as an adult. I mean, I wrote on the whiteboard outside the studio Charlie Brown and Snoopy. So like, I always loved Snoopy because, first of all, I love dogs, but also just all the different characters Snoopy can embody. Mm-hmm. And then he's always that friend when Charlie needs them, and he's always, like, giving crap to Charlie when he needs it, and then, you know, even in this film, teaching him how to dance. And you always do the Snoopy dance, and they had that at the beginning of the film. I was like, yes, we got the Snoopy dance. So I always
how he torments Lucy all the time.
Yeah, I always thought Snoopy was just a fun character to watch in any situation. Yeah.
What about you, Phil? Now I'm curious.
I think I like Lucy because she's a sadist.
She's a sadist.
Okay. Interesting.
You interpret that how you may.
All right. So let's get...
Good to view. You know, it just harkens back to one of the specials with Lucy. And again, she's the one, she has the ego. You know, she always thinks she's the smartest one or the most beautiful one in the room. But, you know, with
Linus, to be fair, Charlie did insult her quite heavily.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty... here's the thing. I feel like if this movie's teaching kids any, especially guys, that's a big insult for any woman or girl.
Refresh our memory.
At her stand, when he says, I have trouble speaking to good to pretty girls.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And he's obviously holding a conversation with her like it's nothing. Yeah. I.e., she's ugly.
Yeah.
At least that's what, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe it's an ugly personality.
But I don't even think he meant it that way.
No, but like, here's the thing. We'll just say there's someone whose initials are SL, and he doesn't mean half of what he says. And dear Lord, the stuff that comes out of his mouth sometimes. Okay? So just a cautionary tale in general for young and old alike. Be careful what the hell you say.
He's 7 years old. I think that I don't think he meant it intentionally.
I was 7 years old too when I said a bunch of stuff. It still landed me in the principal's office. Okay, so let's be honest.
Fair enough.
You know what? I don't have a hard time believing that. All right, let's get into the animation. Obviously, Blue Sky was behind this, but we got Scott Carroll, the animation supervisor. And he worked really closely with Charles Schultz again, the son of, Craig Schultz, the son of Charles Schultz.
Right.
And because, as we know, Peanuts is mostly hand-drawn 2D animation, they obviously had to transpose that to 3D, which poses a lot of big technical situations for them to up their game.
It posed a ton of problems for Blue Sky. And again, the simplicity of the television specials being too, you know, we're seeing them from like sides. They're walking, sometimes they're sitting on the wall, so we're seeing them. So we either see left side, right side, straight on, that's usually it. And for the movie to render, to take these characters, they had a really hard time, from what I understand, with Snoopy. Because you have to have a 3D model, and just trying to get it right so that if the camera was going to turn, it messed up his face. And they had to invent a technology to try to help that in with his fur to try to make him look a little furry, fuzzy.
Yeah, so, I appreciated all the animation. I felt like it stayed true to what we knew it to be, but I felt like... Maybe this is just me not liking movies in 3D, but I felt like this movie did not need to be in 3D for me personally.
I'm not going to disagree. I'm a big proponent of 3D. However, I did see this movie in 3D.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be in 3D, but I wasn't disappointed that I saw it in 3D because there were certain renderings like the Red Baron and the flying that actually looked good in 3D. Had I not seen it in 3D... I wouldn't have, like, it wouldn't have bothered me, and I agree that I don't think it needed to be in 3D, but I wasn't disappointed I saw it in that format, but it was great to see these characters come off the screen, in a sense. You know, I
agree
that.
With that. I just, for some reason, if something's in 3D, I want it to be, like, Avatar 3D. Like,
sure.
Like, there's, like, a real reason.
There's a reason behind it.
Yeah, where this felt like I'm used to them in 2D. I don't know that I need it in 3D.
Yeah.
I didn't see this film in 3D. I saw it in the normal format, but still, I enjoyed watching it, and especially how they had it in the more up-to-date animation that we have in all children's films now, which didn't bother me. I thought they did a great job, the overall look, the character design. It was pretty much spot on.
Yeah.
I think I saw it in 3D, but to me, I mean, what stood out was just the colors.
Mm-hmm.
They really nailed it in how they did that.
Yeah.
The technique of it all. And obviously, they've been colorful before, but...
Absolutely.
But the vibrancy...
Mm-hmm. It looked fantastic, so bad, and it, yeah. And it's so...
Because it took you through the seasons, too.
Absolutely.
So to the way they did the seasons and the houses, that really stood out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny when reading about how they did the animation, I was really surprised to all the issues that they ran into in doing the animation. Like, one of their biggest problems was Charlie Brown's hair.
And I was has no hair.
The curly Q.
Well, and, I get that, but...
Well, but again, like, you wouldn't...
The curly Q moves.
I didn't think that would be such an issue, but the way that when he's facing camera, you know, when he's drawn to face the camera, how it is, and if he turns his head, then it changes into, they say, like, a little candy cane, and how they had to get that right, and whether or not, in some of the earlier strips... Charlie Brown has, like, a crew cut, okay? And they were thinking of giving him hair, and they tried to do it, and it didn't even look like Charlie Brown.
That would have been terrible.
It would have been terrible.
No but crew cuts for Charlie.
No, but the squiggly thing is supposed to emulate some semblance of a short haircut. And you wouldn't think that bringing those 2D animations from what we grew up with watching would cause such problems bringing it to the big screen, but... It ended up costing a lot, and it did. You know, they had to come up with they had to think on their feet as to how to get this animated properly. But I think they did a fantastic job. I didn't think they did a disservice to any one of the characters and to how they looked. Even Pigpen, with like trying to get his yeah. dust, they yeah. said was a
problematic.
For them. And I think they nailed it. I mean, again, these characters are so iconic. They really, to their credit, they, working with the Schultz family, they did a great job in making sure that there was no disservice done to the characters and that they looked great. And I thought they did a wonderful rendering, 3D and or 2D viewing.
Yeah. Right. they seem familiar to me, and I think that that's always the problem, is sometimes when you try to do too much in your animation and right. and bring it into with new technology, it can start to look unfamiliar. And these characters, and also, as Phil mentioned, with all the color, it felt like that Peanuts that you know and love. And
right.
that's ultimately, I think, when you have something like this that's so iconic, you want it to stay familiar to the people who know it, just also in terms of box office, because you don't want it to look like, oh, this is for a new generation, I won't go see that. You want that to play to everyone from young to old.
Right.
Yeah. A little bit more about the animation. I do have to just give... everybody, all the animators and producers who was attached to this film, serious credit, because they had a very thorough process of, you know, transcribing it from pencil renderings to actual animation. It was a good step-by-step process. So first of all, they did basically the whole movie in pencil drawn format with the 2D, and then they go over to rigging, which is where they set up the actual character models in the programs and get the joints working, get the actual movement of the character so the animators have control over just moving each character. And then they move into actually animating all the characters throughout the story, and that takes the longest process for obvious reasons. And then they go into another step called materials, which is the full coloring and all the hair grooming, you know, my perfectly natural curly hair.
Right.
You know,
right.
So they work on the details of the hair groomings and all those fine details for the characters. And then going into the lighting with the color and setting the tone and the atmosphere of each particular scene. And I love the vibrant lighting. That was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, so there was a good animation process
for this. And I want to speak again to the animation, because this movie did something else that I really loved, where it blended this new animation with the old school animation. If Charlie Brown was having a flashback, I'm looking at a picture right here, where he's thinking where the black cloud is over his head and it's raining. This is all the old pencil, like this is the cartoon we grew up with watching type of animation. Or it came from a comic panel or your newspaper comic panel. And I love the blending of the two. because it was enough to show respect for the origins of these characters and how they were brought up. Yet at the same time, we have the modern look of our Peanuts character, you know, in today's big screen. And I really love that they paid homage to the actual Charles Schulz type drawings.
Yeah, and they had the whole pencil sketch for to depict motion and, you know, when the particular scene when, you know, the football with right. Lucy and Charlie, which Phil
didn't happen in the movie.
Didn't happen in the actual movie. It happened post credits movie. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Well, it happened. Why it didn't happen in the movie?
It happened 3 seconds after the movie.
Yeah,
no, I don't
but
think
we said so. Because I remember watching the film, and once the second the credits start rolling, I was like, we didn't get a football, and then 2 seconds later, we got the football scene. I was like, okay, here it is.
Yeah, but that's just kind of like a, we didn't give you this when we should have. That's the flaw, right, Dimitri?
Well,
you asked were there flaws with this movie?
Yeah,
that's the flaw. It wasn't in the movie. They didn't find a place for it in the movie.
It was in the movie.
It's not in the movie.
I guarantee
feel like
you
they
saw.
Gave the bigger story was Charlie and a kite, not Charlie and a football.
I was also going to say Charlie and baseball.
Yeah, and Charlie and baseball.
Would you have preferred that? Yeah, would you have preferred it to be instead of the baseball? Yeah,
I would have preferred it take 30 seconds away from Red Baron and add this.
Right,
that's
there
it.
You go.
But they had the football.
No, they didn't.
It was good. They did.
They did not.
We saw it.
They did not.
So, well, the other thing, too, that I... Okay. Was everybody else equally as happy as I was when we had the... Let's call it the quote-unquote Peanuts dance sequence. Okay?
The school dance?
I'm talking the sequence that comes right out of the classic Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, where each of the characters is doing their own dance, whether it's the zombie, whether it's this dance. Like, they had that scene where each of the characters were doing their own special little happy dance. And I was like, that's so great. Because, again, it pays homage. It's a great recall. And it was just awesome to see, even though we see it every year in the Christmas special. But it was... You know?
I love any dance sequence, so I'm going to be game for that for sure. And that one just felt like another reason that we didn't need, and I was so happy again that they didn't do like the introduction to all these characters, because
right.
you get that again in those moments. There are moments
right.
that they included that give you all the information you need, and that the dance sequence, as fun as it was, also I think you could take away who these characters were.
Sure.
Yeah. Are you talking about the ice skating?
Well, ice skating's another great scene.
Well, I like that one. It just, the way it was set up and the way it was done, I was expecting credits or like some sort of, at the
right.
very least, like the Peanuts movie at the end of it.
Yeah.
Whatever. I thought it was great, but it built up to, all right, let's all go home now. Something was missing from that piece.
Okay.
And that was a moment where perhaps, again, I'm not saying to have done it, but you could have definitely, like, just had people's names over them as they skated by or something. It just felt like, you know, just in the way film's constructed, like that was a credit sequence at the beginning.
And they've never really had a credit sequence other than saying the name of the special. But I love that opening sequence because, again, it's a throwback to Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. The other great thing about this, too, was, you know, people tend to forget all of these characters, they're all friends, okay? They go to school together. After school, they play together. When it's a snow day, they go skate and or sled together. Like, I like the concept of them going outside and actually playing. Again, it's taking away the technology to maybe some people today. Maybe that's a foreign concept, but I really enjoyed that social... I like that social aspect that these kids were friends in the neighborhood. And whether or not they could pick on one another... They were still friends.
Right. I agree.
Stephanie, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's right.
I love that the fact that they didn't rely on technology like most today is, because it allowed the audience to get more emotionally invested in all these characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's especially for adults who are going into this film who are all nostalgic and wants to see what their character is like. If they saw Lucy with the cell phone, they would be upset. So
I think so.
Again, I think we should make a parody.
Maybe.
Snow well, it's called South Park. It's called South Park. South Park.
I'm talking about with these kids. Like, you could have literally, like, hey, Linus, hey, why don't you take an Uber here? We'll play some video games. It's a snow day. You know what I mean? Like,
just create like Peanuts modern day.
Hey, come on over! I just got Battlefront.
There you go. Like all these things that you could do.
It makes me so sad that I hope kids still have some of this experience. Like, I know it's naive to think that they're still, like, running around outside all the time, because obviously we have all this technology and kids are using it constantly. But I just, like, I had such fond memories and it brought back all those times for me. So I hope that kids today still have
that. Yeah, and, you know, particularly, too, another great thing. So Snoopy's writing a story. He's writing his book. And he takes out a typewriter. Mm-hmm. What's a typewriter? Mm-hmm. And what's great about it is when you watch that scene, and it was purposely done for kids, was they made sure to educate what a typewriter did or does.
This is how you put paper into it.
Yeah, this is the paper, and it types, and blah, blah, blah. I didn't think of it while I was watching it because I know what a typewriter is. But after I read about it, going, oh, yeah, I guess they did take through all the steps of this is what a typewriter does. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty clever. I wonder and I hope that the kids grasp what this is. And they probably went, you know, maybe after the movie, what was that? I've never seen that before. So, but I just like that. I like that they took the time to educate their child audience into telling this is the way they write. And it was never a throwback to the past. It never said, this is how they did things back then. No, this is how in the Peanuts movies they've always done things. Mm-hmm. It's never changed.
Do you think that kids think that typewriters only exist in Peanuts world? Like when you put it that way, I wonder if they realize that they exist in this world.
That's hard to say, especially knowing that the actual cast members for this film... we're all born after Charles Schulz died, so it was like they never grew up with actual typewriters.
All I know is that I forget who told me this story about parents were on a phone, like a rotary phone, and father said to the daughter, "Here, honey, hang this up." And she looked at him and goes, "What?" She goes, "Hang up the phone." "What?" She goes, "Hang up the phone." She goes, "My dad's asking me." She goes, "What?" She comes down and she's like, "What is this? How do I hang up a phone? There's no button here." And they take it and they go, the phone's hung up. So I'm guessing that kids don't... I don't want to judge. I don't want to presume, but maybe a lot of people
don't know. The button is the hang-up button is the phone on the
right.
receiver. Yeah. But they don't know that.
I really took this down a deep, dark turn, didn't I?
But again,
I think technology does.
But there is, you know, they're still using rotary phones to call one another and say, hey, or they go over the house. And how funny is it? Charlie Brown opens up his closet and it's all, and like, yeah, I think I'll do this one today.
The same
shirt. It's awesome. Yeah,
I like
this
that.
It's great.
And it's also just going over to someone's house,
yeah,
too, whereas sending an email or sending a text message, hey, I'm coming over, the actual motion of going to someone's house and ringing the doorbell. Yeah. That's so foreign now as well.
Yes, again,
I really like the odes back to... It keeps this film timeless. Yeah.
We talked about Book Report earlier, right? A, he went into a library.
Mm-hmm.
B, he handwrote the book report. And I loved when they go into his... Like, we see a shot of his room that's got all the string... attached, like it looked like a CSI crime scene, you know, like where he's like, but he was using note cards, it's stuff like that I really appreciated that they didn't augment just to pander to the audience. They really kept it sweet, innocent, with very good messages, I think, and positive messages for kids to have. So,
yeah, you know. And it seems like for reception, there's been positive reviews about this film. Let's see, it had a $99 million budget, which is for an animation film. That's actually fairly good.
It's fairly low. And you got to figure that with print and advertising, this probably got around 130. I don't know. I think for... I think that's expensive for, okay. for a Peanuts movie. However, I mean, you know, box office-wise... You know, yeah, it's, you know, 130... Rotten Tomatoes, it had an 86%, which to me, that's a little bit low. I don't understand how you can really dump on this movie. I really don't.
Yeah.
It got an A in Cinema Score. You know, and then we're looking at box office gross. We're looking at, you know, it did opening weekend, it was $44 million. It came in number two. Came in number two to James Bond, another, you know, an adult franchise as well. But there aren't that many kids' movies out there.
None.
But Peanuts going on nostalgia. This is definitely going to be, you know, I guess in today's world, you tend to think that the kids are dragging the parents to see the kids' movie, unless it's maybe a Pixar or something. This one, I can definitely see the parents totally on board with taking the kids. You know, like, come on, we're going to go see the Peanuts. I think there was a nostalgia factor. So doing $44 million for this movie, I think, is great. You know, it had a worldwide distribution. So when you do, so far, its lifetime worldwide is about 4.5 to 5 million overseas, foreign gross. Worldwide, it's then about $53 to $55 million. We're domestic gross at 48. It's probably higher than 50 it now. So I just think that
as of November 11th, it's over 61 million. So. For worldwide.
Yeah, and think about it. We're going into a great holiday season. Kids are going to be off of school. The only foreseeable competition that I see is The Good Dinosaur. It's Pixar. It's going to be big competition. But I still think that Peanuts will have the mettle to stay in theaters because just for the fact of giving people an option and because it's been doing pretty well and people are liking this movie. The interesting thing that I was reading about, there may not be a sequel. You know, the Schultz family thus far has not okayed a sequel. They weren't thinking sequel when they were making this movie.
They weren't planning a sequel.
So, you know, unless they change their minds, you know, this may be a one-off, which also in this business would be something fresh and yeah. Because they'll be able to sell it on home video.
But here's the thing. I mean, I don't need a sequel to this movie.
Right.
But I think the way I would define it, you could have a second movie, right?
Sure.
And that's the way I would define it.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's just so many things you can do. And to see it in this, I think, you know, they've proven that they can do this.
Right.
So why not come up with another story and just do it? And don't worry, don't make a sequel, make another movie.
Right.
That's
it. I agree.
Yeah. And
make another one off.
So. And Craig Schultz, he himself said, there are no plans for a sequel. He said, in a quote, I thought it would be great if in my lifetime I could see one really good Peanuts movie before somebody decides to buy the brand out and decides to make movies just to make money. And I think that's actually a really good thing to go off of. It's like, he does it for the love of the story, because this is so near and dear to you know, his heart and his family. This is an honor to his father. I think they definitely accomplished that.
Hey, folks, would you excuse me for a sec? I have to head out for a sec. I'll be right back for wrap up, but I have to step out. And
yeah,
take care
absolutely.
Of something. So thank you.
Go get your redhead girl.
go get your redheaded girl. So I'm okay if they're. Isn't a sequel. I think this film definitely stands alone just as a one-off, and I think it's strong enough to be.
I think it is, too. I just think, you know, part of it is greed. Like, you made such a good movie. Show me you can do it again.
I think of it as you're kind of saying its own story, though. I don't want to see maybe not the redheaded girl again. Maybe there's some new, or she's with him now in whatever capacity that means when you're seven.
I think you just hit the it's just like Scooby-Doo, every episode of Scooby-Doo, right?
Right.
Just hit the reset button, you know, and then the next week you have no knowledge of what happened. So in this regard, the second movie would have no knowledge of the first movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. That makes perfect sense to me. I just love that they're kind of not so money-focused. It seems like they really want to honor Peanuts and maybe introduce it to a new generation.
Yeah, and I think it's great because so many kids now... watching this film get get a sense of what it used to be back in the 50s when, you know, this creation was started. So I really liked it. Peanuts does stand the test of time. For a film for today's society, I think it was really strong kids' film. And for adults, because adults are the ones watching this as well. The adults are the ones who are mostly going to this for the nostalgic reason. I really, really enjoyed it.
I thought it was good. And, you know, if you really analyze certain things, you could take them in a different direction, but
I'm going to be the positive one. Well, like Marissa, you liked it too. And say that I really just appreciated the message, that I think it's a great reminder. I could go into about how a friend of mine compared it to online dating last night, and that you have to look at the real person, not like the...
Not a profile pic.
Not profile pics or like what they do for a living. It's about who they are. And I think that gets lost, in especially in this society and how fast we all move. And this was a great reminder for adults and hopefully a good introduction for kids that you have to look deeper than that.
Yeah.
I hope kids aren't online dating.
Oh, then
thank you. Yeah.
That'd be a sad world if that's true. A couple of fun tidbits. The Parents Television Council is actually, the PTC is proud to award the Peanuts movie the seal of approval.
Oh.
So they definitely recommend this film for all viewers.
There was nothing in it that wasn't appropriate. You could bring a 3-year-old to that movie for sure, all the way.
And again, to be fair, Gone with the Wind is rated G.
Okay. They had more timely, more violent situations in that film.
Yeah. So. Phil's very upset that Gone with the Wind, you're like, the rating system seems off.
Well, the rating system has changed since 1939,
Phil. I understand. Well, we have a different thought of what G
what G means, yes. And then another fun thing, there have been 45 television specials that Charles Schulz drew more than 18,000 comic strips over the course of the Peanuts 50-year run, which I didn't realize. That's, wow, over 18,000. So that's amazing. I can't even tell you how many different stories that people who grew up with this franchise saw.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. You can follow down the rabbit hole if you want now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Peanuts brand, alongside Charles Ayers in 2010, and the Wall Street Journal cited an annual retail sales of $2 billion just for Peanuts. After all these years, they still generate that much money.
Wow. So, it's incredible to think about. I feel like right now we have so many big franchises with Bond and Star Wars coming up and all of that, and to think that something that, you know, started so long ago is still doing so well, and all of these things are really being successful, it shows that we're not over it yet, for sure.
And this film will definitely add to that revenue. So, overall quick thoughts. Stephanie, how about you?
I think I've kind of said it, but I just really appreciated this movie. Was sweet. I didn't know exactly what I was going to walk into. Sometimes when things get modernized, it loses some of that appeal that it had when I was 7 or 8, and I really didn't want it to. And I appreciated the fact that they stayed true to what Peanuts has always been.
Yes. And Dimitri, what were your last final thoughts of this film?
Well, I mean, just to echo what you were saying, I mean, I think that the Peanuts has built a legacy through its 50-plus years of being around, and I got a sense, number one, I think they did a fantastic job marketing this movie because it was saying to young and old, you're getting the classic characters that you love. There's going to be some wonderful, heartwarming nostalgia put into this movie, and I was very happy that they didn't modernize it. It was one of the things that I picked up on when I saw a rotary phone, when I noticed that they weren't taking out cell phones. They didn't bring it into today's world, and that, to me, kept its innocence, but in a way that didn't beat you over the head. And its messages and charm and heart warmth, you know, the forever optimism that Charlie Brown has, even though there's a dark cloud over his head, was not lost. And it never beat... They never had to rely on fart humor. And again, I love a good fart joke, but not on a Peanuts movie. I didn't need to see that happen here. I love that they kept the humor well-intentioned and heartwarming and fun. And, you know, at the times, you know, when it comes at the expense of Charlie Brown, you just sort of kind of expect it. But it was never overdone. We never got cliche. We just got what we have grown up to know and love. No matter what generation you're, no matter how old or young you are, they stay true to form. And so I really respect that in both Blue Sky. The Schultz family obviously has a lot invested mm-hmm. for Charles Schultz's legacy. And I think this movie lives up to that legacy. And, you know, I can't wait for it to come out on Blu-ray. You know, it's something that I could watch annually, and I think they did a really, really fantastic job.
Yeah. Phil?
I agree with all of it, and I think it has a huge rewatchability factor, you know, because there's definitely, animated or not, there's definitely movies that you're like, oh, that's a great movie, but are you ever going to see it again? No. This has that rewatchability factor, and you know, I'm excited to see it again and kind of see it in different phases, right? What's great about it, you know, there's that 50-year history. Marissa was just kind of rattling off all the various things, and so you know, it's a fun thing to go down and kind of revisit some of this stuff if you've seen it before, see it for the first time, yeah. Then perhaps revisit. So you know, the rabbit hole is as deep as you want it.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed this film. I appreciate the Peanuts movie even more so because it made me feel, it was so feel good. And that's what I loved walking out of this film. It was so cute and endearing that I would definitely watch this film over 10 times fold.
And it does make you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, in today's day and age, to walk out of a movie where it makes you feel good, sometimes that's few and far in between, and it can be hard to do, but this movie did. I still, you know, I would love to have an answer to, did the parents enjoy this more than their kids? You know, did they, you know, I'm just curious by that. I don't know. We did have one, I know we had one person who was online. I wanted to do a shout out to that person and say, hey, thanks for watching and or listening. I thank you to whoever. I can't read the name. It's too small. Can you see who it is?
Mm-hmm. Star Drew. Star Drew,
thanks for being online with us. We really appreciate it. Jay Hodges. Peanuts was a brush of fresh air for parents that want to take their kids to a clean family movie with a good message.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And it definitely was a family movie. And I guess I'll just end us with that. At the beginning of this film, Craig Schultz, the son of Charles, said he stood before all the employees and said, I quote, "My father's family and people who collaborated with him refer to him as Sparky, him being Charles. So that's his nickname, and that's how they refer to him. I want you, as we're working on this film, to call my dad Sparky."
Nice.
So while they were working, and every time they referenced Charles, they mentioned Sparky.
Yep.
So definitely family film, definitely fun film, and fun discussion. So
yeah, thanks, Marissa. Thanks, Phil.
At the end of all of this, where can everyone keep following you to talk about more fun films?
Oh, you can follow me at Stephanie Wenger on Twitter and Instagram.
You can support me on Twitter at dmovies1701.
Follow us here at The Popcorn Talk or popcorntalk.com.
Yes, and follow us all on iTunes, YouTube, Twitter, at Movie Anatomy. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Thank you all for listening, and we will have more dissections to listen to, talk about. And we love talking about films. We love talking about this one, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, all.
I feel better when I'm dancing, yeah, yeah. I'm better when I'm dancing, yeah, yeah.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.